Hi everyone, welcome back to the High Percentage Podcast. I had a terrifying 20 minutes there because I was having microphone problems and I was like, wow, we don't got a microphone, we don't got a podcast today, but got that worked out. Hey, back after a hiatus last week, we did not upload an episode. And an old teacher of mine used to say there's a difference between excuses and reasons, and I have reasons for this, which was I did ADCC play-by-play last weekend. It was great and it was brutal at the same time. It was 2 days of nothing but watching matches and typing quick play-by-play summaries onto the computer, and then quickly kind of uploading them and getting them refreshed on grapplinginsider.com. On the plus side, we had the most traffic we've ever had in a single weekend. I mean, we really crushed it. And I think we did the only play-by-play really that I could find on the internet. And I don't know why, because it's something that definitely people look for and find value in. So that was fantastic. The downside is, as far as I could tell, we watched over 100 jiu-jitsu matches. And, you know, I love jiu-jitsu as much as the next guy or girl, but that was brutal, man. It was 9 hours on Sunday, and we didn't finish until the super fight ended, like at probably 7 o'clock. And I just didn't have it in me. I couldn't talk about submission grappling anymore. So took a break, but I did post an article about ADCC over the week, and that's what I'd like to talk about today, because ADCC is a fantastic time to kind of check in on the meta of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and submission grappling, because it's generally agreed that it's one of the top, you know, it's one of the highest level caliber competitions. It brings out some of the best competitors in the world, the best competitors in the world in no-gi grappling, and it's a good time for us to watch what they're doing and try to figure out if the meta of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is changing. And I know we've done an episode before on the meta, but I'm just going to do a quick review in case you forgot what that is. So the meta is usually short for the metagame, and in it means actually two things in game theory. In sports, the metagame refers to anything outside of the actual game that influences the game. A good example would be like the crowd. The crowd is outside the game, but depending on their volume level or, you know, whether you're on the home team or the away team, the crowd is a part of the metagame that will influence in some intangible, you know, maybe slight ways, the outcome or the performance of the players. So that's sort of one definition in sports. In gaming, particularly in competitive gaming, the meta is something a little different. It's an acronym, and it stands for the most effective tactic available. And when people use the term meta, or someone is playing on meta, what that means is that the professional level players will be using the most effective tactic available because they're professionals and it's very high stakes, and you know, they want to win, clearly. When me and you practice rolling in the gym, we may or may not be on meta, which is some of us may have sort of unique games that work well for us, but they wouldn't work well for other people or players. And then some of us may not be competitors, or maybe we're casual competitors, and we have things that work well, but they wouldn't encounter diminishing returns as you got to the highest levels of the game, or maybe they don't even work well at all. You know, there's a lot of people, and I've certainly been one of them before, where I've fallen in love with moves that when I think about it, they were actually fairly low percentage, but those few times that I would hit it, I'd feel really good about myself. You know, something really exotic, like a go-go plotter or something like that. No offense if you're a go-go plotter player. I just sort of picked something that came to mind. If you ask an average person what the meta of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is right now, almost all of them would say leg locks, that we are kind of in this golden age of leg locks that have started to come to prominence probably more or less in the last 10 years, but really I'd say in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years is when it's really, really started to accelerate. And people are wondering, and I'm certainly wondering, whether this is a trend that is going to come and go. We've seen trends sort of come and go in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There was times when the spider guard was a really hot guard, or when Marcelo Garcia was tearing it up in the early 2000s, the butterfly guard was very, very popular. You know, those things sort of came and went, and then there's other things that they sort of, they experience a peak, and then they decline, but they still stay in the game. The butterfly guard's a great example. It's not dead by any means. In fact, the rise of leg lock and leg attack positions has given sort of a resurgence to the butterfly guard, because it's a really good entry for some of those bottom leg attack positions. Many people, very smart people, have recently kind of wondered aloud if the leg lock craze has reached its peak and if it's going to start declining now. I was watching the BJJ Fanatics Brown Belt Invitational, and Gordon Ryan was kind of talking aloud, and it was either him or the other commentator that was with him. I think it was Todd. And they were basically saying, you know, they were watching these brown belts and someone said, hey, there's not as much leg locks as I thought there would be. And I think it was Gordon said, well, you know, people are studying the leg lock game very closely. They're learning the defenses, and they're not as high percentage as they used to be. So they're certainly not going to be going away, but they are just going to become another technique that you have to do. And ADCC is a great chance to sort of test that theory, because if there's something that's even slightly higher percentage than everything else, you can bet that these world-class competitors are going to be employing it. So let's talk about some of the things that we might have observed during ADCC, and whether it's going to start something that maybe lower-level competitors can take a cue from. First thing I want to talk about was the dominance of guard players, and that something we talked about last week, which is ADCC really penalizes you for pulling guard. However, it does not do that in the first half of the match. And I should mention while I'm thinking about it, this is something that I wasn't really, I didn't make as clear as I should have in the last podcast, which I said if you pull guard in ADCC, you're penalized. But that's not really true. You are allowed to pull guard in the first part of a match. It's after the halfway point that you are penalized from pulling guard. And even there, there is an exception, which is, I believe, in overtime. If you're in any overtime, then penalties are in play right off the bat. So if you go into an overtime and you sit to guard, then you will be penalized. However, in the face of all that, it was fascinating to see that there were several competitors that made the calculation that despite being penalized, it was still actually a net gain for them to take a penalty, sit in the guard, and work their game. Some notable examples, Paul Miao took penalties in overtime twice, I believe, because he wanted to be in guard. And it wasn't just him. I know Miao is you know, he's a very unique person in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with kind of a legendary guard game. But it wasn't just him. 10th Planet Phenom Elvira, she sat to guard a couple times. I believe she was injured in that match, so that makes some sense, or that might justify why she did it outside the rule set. But even beyond that, clearly she was a bottom player, and even when her matches were in regulation, she was sitting to guard right away. Lachlan Giles, he would run to the center of the mats and he would sit in guard. And in the High Percentage podcast and on the website, we've talked before about how a lot of these competitions, and ADCC is one of them, are structured where it's very difficult to accrue points when you're on the bottom. But despite that, these competitors have still figured that they would prefer to be on the bottom because they feel like they have the best chance of getting a submission that way. Another thing that makes this impressive is that in ADCC, just like in IBJJF, the only way you can score points from the bottom is to sweep. However, unlike IBJJF, it's much harder to score points on a sweep in ADCC because there's the two shoulder rule, which is in order for someone to be considered down, both their shoulders have to be touching the mat. I don't think it's quite like that in IBJJF. I believe it's the 3-second rule. And it's what it allows people to do in ADCC is you can have your butt on the ground, but if you can put your hands behind you and get your shoulders off the mat, then you're not really considered down. And that makes a huge difference. So people were commenting in the commentator's booth that even to get a sweep is very challenging because you have to really wrestle to get a sweep. So all of that, you would think in abstract, would make someone really reluctant to play guard, especially when you figure that statistically submissions are less likely in ADCC. However, some of the very successful competitors this weekend, like Lachlan Giles, For them, it was no question. They sat to guard immediately and started working. So what does that mean with the meta? Guard players are alive and well. They're not going anywhere. This at the high level, at high percentage, we still recommend, if you're sort of a newer competitor, that you take an approach of getting on top and pursuing positional dominance so that you can score points. However, if it's a no-point scenario, then by all means, play guard. That's what some of the best people in the world are doing. And what kind of guards are these players using? Well, there were two guards that really stood out in the weekend. And I remember at one point, me and Roy, we were on a call together because in real time, two guys are trying to watch three mats worth of action. And I said to him, man, does it seem like to you like you're seeing a lot of knee shield half guard? And he said, absolutely. So the one guard that we noticed, especially in day one of the tournament, was a lot of people were using knee shield half guard, and this includes some of its variations. So to get really technical, there's the knee shield, and then there's the Z guard, which is generally like a lower kind of knee shield. And then one thing that I noticed with Lachlan and with Craig Jones is that they don't play a close half guard like you would think with if you were like getting a dogfight half guard where you wanted an underhook and getting a dogfight, or certainly like a lockdown half guard, which is very, very close. They were playing this sort of distance floating half guard. And the reason, especially for Lachlan, that he was doing that was he wanted to invert from half guard and to attack legs. So that was a kind of guard that I really noticed, that people that were trying to set up leg attacks, they like that knee shield half guard. Also in the women's division, you saw particularly some of Gabby Garcia's opponents were making really good use of that knee shield, but that was for a different reason. That's because it's a good way to keep large people off of you, and this is something I can personally attest to, you know, rooster weight and all. And the second big guard that we saw, and maybe this was even more dominant than the knee shield half guard, was the butterfly guard. This is sort of the Gordon Ryan's kind of go-to guard. Lachlan Giles really liked the butterfly half guard. And it's interesting because even within it, they have some kind of different takes on it. So, you know, Lachlan seemed to go like a lot more knees out. Gordon was more like knees point towards the ceiling. But one thing that Gordon consistently did, and I'm not sure why he did this, was a lot of times he put his hand directly behind him, and he was on his backhand or he was on his back elbow, and other competitors weren't necessarily doing that with their butterfly guard. And it's no surprise, both Lachlan and Gordon are leg lock guys. Gordon's become a lot more well-rounded, but you know, he's obviously really skilled at leg locks, and people that like to go for leg locks should be playing butterfly guard, because butterfly guard offers some really good options for getting two legs inside or even doing inversions, which a lot of people were doing this weekend. Okay, so we covered two things in the meta. First was that there was a lot of guard playing, and a lot of the really successful competitors were guard players, but there were many successful top players too. I don't mean to exclude them. Second, as far as positions that we saw a lot of, half guard and butterfly guard, particularly from leg lockers. I should mention, I didn't plan to mention this, but we did see tons of inversions all weekend long. And what was interesting about the inversions, and tells you that it's very clearly a part of the meta, was that different styles of jiu-jitsu were doing inversions. So we saw Gio Martinez, the 10th Lance style. Both him and Elvira and Thor were all doing inversions. But then we also saw, of course, Paolo Miao doing inverted attacks. I think we saw Kennedy doing inversion attacks, and some of the female competitors were doing them too. And they all had kind of different purposes for doing them. Who was the guy that beat Lucas Lepre? I have to check, because people are going to be mad if I forget his name. Okay, it was Dante Leone. He maybe had the upset of the tournament. He beat Lucas Lepre, and he did it with inversions, but his were more sort of traditional backtake inversions. And I think he definitely took Lucas's back once. He might have taken it twice, but he just had some brilliant inversions that he was working in a couple of his matches. So what that tells you is that inversions are useful for different competitors with different sort of game plans and strengths and weaknesses. So it's something to look into if you're playing more of an open guard game, particularly if you're a leg locker. Another trend that I noticed this weekend was how important the back attack was. And what I noticed, and this is again something that as I was watching it, I kind of like asked Roy, like, hey, are you seeing this a lot the last couple days? Which is that competitors were really not interested in being in the mount, and they were very not interested in being in side control. I rarely saw side control for more than a couple seconds at ADCC. You didn't see a whole lot of guys working attacks from the mount. Everyone wanted the back, to the point where a lot of people would not even pass guard. They would try to attack the back straight from inside people's guard. That's where kind of a lot of the inversions came along. And also what you saw when people hit takedowns is they would go straight from a takedown and they would try to get to the back within, you know, as fast as they could. They weren't interested in doing those traditional pit stops that a lot of, you know, blue and purple belts would do, which is, you know, stop at side control, you know, take a second, consolidate your win and your points, and then go to the next thing, and then go to the next thing. These guys wanted to go straight there. Now, this could just be kind of an ADCC thing, again, because of the two-shoulder rule, which is that you saw a lot of competitors that they were trying to keep their shoulders off the mat, and in doing so, maybe they exposed their back. And it's also possible that at this really high level, a lot of people have figured out that it's just almost impossible to pass some of these guys and girls' guards. So it's better for them to just try to attack leg locks and kind of chain that with taking the back. Interesting thing is that Keenan Cornelius did a podcast in the summer on Flow Grappling, and he kind of predicted this. He said that, and this was, you know, way before ADCC, and he said the way no-gi grappling is shaping up right now, I think that passing the guard is going to become less and less important because people are just going to be attacking leg locks from the guard, and if that doesn't work, they're going to try to go straight for back takes, and I definitely felt like that was happening at ADCC. Also worth noting that the rear naked choke was the top finisher at ADCC again. I think, I'm going from memory, I think there were 35 submissions, and 9 of those were rear naked chokes. While we're on the subject of numbers, which is one of our favorite things at High Percentage, I think the order of submissions was RNCs was the first, heel hooks were the second, and then the third was guillotines. And I was actually very pleased to see this because this really matches up with a lot of the data that we've collected. We've shown that in no-gi matches, the top performing submissions across all belt levels are rear naked chokes, guillotines, arm bars, and triangles. Now at ADCC, heel hooks are 100% legal, so they're going to be much more represented. Some of the research that we've done has been across different formats where different kinds of leg locks were not always legal. So when you're at the high level, basically if heel hooks are legal, they're going to be very well represented. But you know, we also showed that guillotines were really a high percentage at the no-gi level, even though in the gi, we have other data that shows that they're very, very low percentage. And the last thing that was very much on meta that we saw at ADCC was body lock takedowns. So this is really interesting because body lock takedowns in the data that we've done at High Percentage are not really anything special. Most people get better results from single legs, sacrifice throws, or just leg trips. So I don't think body lock takedowns is necessarily going to translate to other formats, but at ADCC, a great example of this was JT Torres, which is that there were other competitors, and I saw this throughout the weekend, that were trying to get single legs, but because you had to get both shoulders on the mat, if you just kind of visualize in your head what a single leg looks at, it's your entire body versus one of their legs. That's the kind of jiu-jitsu aspect of it. But really that's only good for kind of getting their butt down on the mat. There's, you are not going to have upper body control. You have to let go of the leg and sort of scramble up. And, we definitely saw that ADCC. So the competitors that had a lot of success were people that were doing body lock takedowns or were doing, that kind of like double leg takedown where, you know, you land right on their diaphragm, on their chest, and then you effectively have upper body control. And those takedowns, in my experience, are pretty advanced takedowns. So, you know, you saw that there were some really good wrestlers like JT Torres that could pull those off. But then everyone else, I think, just wisely made the calculation that, hey, why? Why? I'll get in a guard and I'll try to work my game and get in a good position in the first half of the match. And then if not, you know, we'll see what happens in overtime kind of thing. Now, to kind of circle back to the question that was poised at the beginning of the podcast, which is, are leg locks still essentially the meta, kind of front and center? And I would say yes, for the time being they are. We saw a lot of heel hook finishes. Some people commented that there were not as many leg locks as there was in ADCC 2017. And if you look at the breakdown of the heel hooks, actually a lot of them happened in the absolute division, and a lot of them happened because of Lachlan and getting, I think he got like four leg lock finishes, three or four in his absolute run. And that without him, maybe the statistics would have kind of evened out a little bit. However, I would say he's not an anomaly because he was able to go in there and make really good use of that skill set. One thing that I saw in ADCC is that I felt like there was a clear distinction between the new school leg locking crew that was at ADCC and some of the old school. And old school is probably sounds more pejorative than I mean it to be, but we see this all the time in our gyms at home, which is there are some students, and there are in some cases entire gyms, that they just don't do the leg lock thing. And maybe they learn defenses to it, but it's just not part of their repertoire. Some of it is, the tradition and the history of it, that some people just don't really believe in it. Maybe an old school mentality kind of thing. But I definitely saw that at ADCC. There was even a moment, and this was a moment that was almost a metaphor for the entire thing I'm talking about, which is Buchecha versus Gordon Ryan. And Gordon Ryan was, working his game. And Buchecha, of course, is a legendary competitor, and he's known for having a pretty fundamental old school game, I think it's safe to say. And there was a moment where Buchecha was not faring well. I think he was down on points, and he actually sat down for a leg attack. And Gordon openly laughed at him. And then Buchecha started laughing in the middle of the match, and then the entire audience kind of was chuckling for a moment. And the joke was is that, you know, Buchecha would just, he's not the guy that drops back for leg locks, and I don't know why he did that. Maybe it was a desperation because he was down on points or something like that. But the joke there was that he is part of a group of people in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that it's just not what they do. And as long as that divide exists, leg locks are always going to be powerful because there's going to be a group of people that they're just going to work on. Okay, so that's sort of my ADCC recap from a game theory perspective. Some of the big tournaments coming up between now and the end of the year, I think the big one is going to be the Nogi Worlds, and I think there's a couple in between that. So I'm looking forward to kind of watching those and seeing what the trends are that we can learn from. There's a couple new studies that are in the pike at High Percentage. I'm going to obviously keep doing the podcast. If you want to check out my interviews with Tom DeBlas and Eddie Bravo, they're up on Grappling Insider. You can just type in either my name or one of their names into the search bar. And we are starting to do a little bit more interviews as we get access to the athletes. So hopefully there'll be some exciting stuff coming up with that. I spent some time this week reorganizing the website because I felt like it was harder than it needed to be to find older articles. So what I did was I sort of redid all the categories, and I think I have some basic categories right now, which is game theory articles, stats and research articles, and podcast articles. And then all the articles I kind of like tag with their keywords. So if you are just looking for an article that you're not sure exists, just try typing in the search bar. It should be a little bit easier to find than it's been in the past. That's just been a long-term thing that's been bugging me. And I'm going to keep trying to make the website better and, of course, make the podcast better. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'll see you next week. Have a great week of training.